Terry Wallace joins me for a McCafe coffee catch-up. Try Macca's new cheesy range. Your favourites, only cheesier. Welcome to your plough.
Hello, Dwayne. Fascinating conversation. Yeah, look, that's why it's good to have your 12 o'clock session and having people ring in, because, look, I think that's a really interesting call from Chris. I don't agree with him either. I think in the amateur era, that was perhaps the way that it was. But once it becomes the professional era and you have so much money involved in the game, it has to be part of it. It has to be the fact that it's an entertainment product. And it is an entertainment product. It's competing against every other form of entertainment. And I'll take it further. I know he was talking about AFL, but you're not paying millions upon millions, hundreds of millions of dollars for some of these superstars overseas without it being some form of professionalism and entertainment product. So, I agree. I disagree with Chris. I understand where he's coming from, but certainly I've always thought, part of my job when I was coaching, I always thought was to bring the game closer to the fans and to let them into the product so that they had a greater understanding of what was going on. So that was all part of the entertainment package of making sure those who couldn't get to the game, that were watching it at home, had as much insight as what they possibly could about what it was all about.
Which leads me to Alistair Clarkson's words. Terry, let's play them, let everybody consume them again, and I'll get your thoughts on them. Here's Alistair Clarkson on the AFL. Or was he complaining about the umpiring? The AFL needs to tell the umpires to umpire better. Here's Alistair Clarkson.
Gee, I hope I'm not the only one that thought it was a dreadful game. there's just no highlights in the game. We got a result, bank it and move on. I don't think North played well, and I don't think Hawthorn played well. You can't have that many tackles and not one of them be incorrect disposal. And you wonder why the game is, an arm wrestle and just you can't get any open footy. Like tonight's game was just, God, if that's a spectacle that we're trying to search for in our game's in a dreadful space. But we're better than that, and I think we could do a hell of a lot better by opening the game up a little bit and adjudicate some of those holding the balls for both sides, not just the fact that we had 69 tackles. There were times where we got nailed on a tackle and it should have been holding the ball too. Please, Umps, just pay them. Open the game up.
So was that a complaint about the umpiring or a complaint that the AFL hasn't told the umpires how to umpire properly?
I think this has been on the agenda for Clarko, and I think he's brought it up many, many times before. I go back to final series a couple of years ago where I think that they had something like 90 tackles and didn't receive a free kick from their 90 tackles. So Clarko's been on this side of things for a long while to reward the tackler. This is just the latest of a long instalment. Now, whether you agree with him, whether you don't agree with him, I've agreed with many things. I've sort of said for probably 5 or 6 years now that I've always believed that team prior opportunity should be in our game, that the first person to go and win the ball gets that prior opportunity. But if he sells somebody else into trouble, nobody else actually does, because I think a lot of times what will happen is one person will get tackled and just give a little dinky hand pass to somebody else to just keep the ball in that area, and he's actually selling his teammate, therefore selling the team into trouble. Well, I don't think you should be rewarded for that. I think you should be penalised for that, and I would like to see team prior opportunity at least looked at, in the pre-season games, just to sort of see how it runs. And we should be using those pre-season games to trial anything that we think might be able to help or open up the game. But I agree, but I don't want it to get to the stage where we just sit and wait for somebody else to get the ball and it's an advantage to get to the ball second. So I don't believe that should be the way that we're going either.
Are you seeing what I'm seeing, and I complained about it earlier, this backward handball trend? It's not just one backward handball to a person in a better position looking forward so he can deliver the ball and be attacking. It's actually a backward handball to a backward handball to a backward handball, almost rugby union style, passing the ball behind the wall. It seems to be that there's more... Well, there's less forward handballs than ever.
Yeah, so less risk-taking. You know, people aren't prepared to... You know, people are just not prepared. Players are not prepared under any circumstance to give the ball back to a 50-50 situation or back up a line where there's an outnumber. So they would rather retreat than go forward if it's a risk of losing possession of the ball. And that's happening regularly. I did the Melbourne-Geelong game yesterday, Dwayne, and it was exactly that. The first quarter, Melbourne ended up having more handballs than kicks. They had 36 handballs and only 30 kicks in the quarter. And what it meant was the ball stayed in a close zone, which meant that Geelong were able to keep the tackle pressure on the player who had the ball the entire time, because the ball never got out of the region or out of the area at any stage. So I think Geelong had 16 tackles in the first quarter. When Melbourne actually started to kick the ball more in the second quarter, they had 48 kicks and only 35 hand passes. All of a sudden, when they started kicking, and so the ball moved out of the region, Geelong couldn't tackle as much. Geelong went from 16 tackles to 7 tackles because the ball moved out of the region. And so it seems like the braver sides have been the better scoring sides and the best sides in the competition. But there are some sides that just don't want to play brave, no matter what the circumstances are. And that's an interesting one. I saw a quote over the last 24 hours from Grant Thomas on Twitter, and I thought, you're absolutely spot on. And he was just talking about defensive play. And he just sort of said, look, it's a safety net for, this is for the coaches, it's a safety net to always remain in the game and avoid criticism and retain their jobs. They're afraid to lose rather than dare to win. And he suggested that, like basketball, which you would know, and certainly I would know from my background, you stay close in the contest and then roll the dice late in the game to see whether you can get the result your way. But it's fascinating to sort of see. And I thought Grant's on the money, and I thought even more so, and I hope we've got the audio there, but Stuart Dew spoke about this exact thing this morning. And what Grant Thomas had spoke about within 24 hours, Stuart Dew absolutely confirmed on Waitley this morning.
I think everyone gets caught thinking, everyone knows that jobs hinge on win-loss, and sometimes the exciting part is risk, and it's very risky because on the day that doesn't come off, you can really cop a heavy one under the chin. So, and that's not, I don't think it's self-preservation from the coaches. I think it's trying to protect the footy club.
Yeah, Stuart, he did say it, Stuart.
Yeah, it's interesting, Dwayne, isn't it? I mean, that clearly sort of says that coaches who have been sacked in the past, coaches who have felt, the real pressure and wrath. You go back to Nathan Buckley before Collingwood turned things around over the last couple of years. Yeah, really under the microscope. Ken Hinckley under the microscope. And some of these coaches now are just not prepared to push the button. And as we sort of spoke about in the early part, yeah, they've trained their players so much so that you don't give up the ball if you see an outnumber up forward, or sometimes we don't even go to a 50-50. We want to have more than a 50-50 chance of maintaining possession of the ball. So we'll go sideways, backwards, or around the cape rather than go into the 50-50 contest.
It's a discussion we really need 4 hours on, Terry, to be honest. I've got to run Richmond past you. What do you think's happening there? Brendan Gale seems to think they might actually be better when they go west and play in front of 60,000.
I've got to have a little bit of a laugh for all those who sort of said that Richmond got the good run at the MCG last year with a 7 or 8 in the row. Finally, when they were getting out of the MCG, the fixture changes and they're back there again.
Yes, they are back there. Sunday, MCG against Melbourne as opposed to the West Coast Eagles at Metricon. I said, I think Thursday last week, that I thought Richmond would shake from their slumber, but they didn't, obviously.
No, they did not. I've done both their last two games live. They were certainly better on the weekend. I thought the forward pressure was a little better. We saw some semblance of run and carry and wave running that they're so familiar with, but there are still some areas of their game that are not Richmond-like. When you have the first 30 clearances of the game, and the Tigers only get 10 of the 30. St Kilda having 20, so it's 10 versus 20 of the first 30 clearances. That means something's wrong. I mean, that means there's an attitude that still needs adjusting, because yes, it is about organisation, but to me, that part of the game is as much about will and want, you know, and endeavour, and being prepared to stick your head over the ball. Then we got to the other end of the game. Three undisciplined acts led to three goals from free kicks, a downfield 50-metre penalty, which is an attitude adjustment as well. So still some of their attitude areas are nowhere near. I mean, they set the standard for 2 or 3 years on all those areas, and at the moment they're sort of well behind the pack in a lot of those things.
Yeah, I asked Brendan Gale about the comments by Chris Scott that there's levels of trying. I wonder, with a couple of premierships in the bank now, and whether this coronavirus year is a reason for, you know, not trying as much as you would normally try. Here's Chris Scott, for those that didn't hear me play it earlier, talking about the spectrum of trying.
The effort was great. We know that. I mean, I think most people in the AFL know that there's a spectrum there. It's not did you try or didn't you. But maybe last week, I mean, we opened ourselves up to the accusation that last 1 or 2% wasn't quite there. So I thought that was good.
So they're lower on the spectrum right now, Richmond, than what they normally have been the last couple of years, Terry?
No doubt. No, look, they weren't even on the spectrum against Hawthorn the week before. They were so far off. They were so far off everything they did. I mean, in that game against Hawthorn the week before, they had 6 tackles with 3 minutes to go before half time. 6 for the first half of the game. So that's just not on your tucker at all. And, you know, those couple of things that I sort of said about Saturday's game just shows that there's still an attitude readjustment. Yes, it was better. You know, I have no doubt that it was better than the week before, but you're not setting your standard on anything that was not acceptable the week before. So it's still a fair way off the mark, and another opportunity against Melbourne to readjust. But they need to be a lot sharper. And gee, I've never seen them get so many goals kicked out the back. Their organisation of their defensive structure just wasn't anywhere near what you would expect from a Tiger side. St Kilda just kept running out the back of the goals all game. You know, whether it be Hillwood, whether it be others in their lineup. But the flip side of that is St Kilda. I mean, they should be on the menu because they were very, very good, Dwayne.
Terry Wallace will continue with us after the break for McCafe Coffee Catch-Up. Try Macca's new cheesy range, your favourites only cheesier. Collingwood without Jeremy Howe on the agenda next. Terry Wallace is with me. Plough, Collingwood.
Yeah, well, that's a game that they blew, really, on the other night. Look, obviously, Jeremy Howe going off certainly didn't help things, but, obviously the opposition, the GWS, lost a couple as well, so really no excuses. But when you sit there and you have a look at 15 versus 4 inside 50s in the last quarter Collingwood's way, yet they were outscored 2-1, that really hurts when you have so much dominance in your area of the game. And then I think the thing that frustrates supporters more than anything, and certainly Pies supporters, was 2-7 from set shots on the weekend. I mean, that was just a game that they... they blew, and good luck to GWS. They had to do everything right to get a result against a pretty good side. I'm right in the Pies camp still, because as I sort of said, this is a game that I thought was in their grasp away from home against a desperate opposition who are all right. Yet they still were in a position that they could have won the game, and that was without Steele Sidebottom virtually having any impact at all. And tell me the Tigers still don't have a role in the game, Dwayne. I mean, Matty DeBoer hadn't been at his absolute best in the first couple of rounds, really sort of set himself. And rather than, this is the thing with tagging at times, rather than going for the obvious, which you would think in this case would have been Scott Pendlebury, Scott Pendlebury spent probably half of his 300 games being tagged. So he is so much more accustomed to playing against the Tagger. So you might be able to get Scotty Pendlebury from being 100% down to maybe 85, somewhere around there. But you go after a Steele Sidebottom who doesn't normally get it because Pendlebury's getting it, and all of a sudden it's zero touches in the first quarter and only 12 possessions and no impact for the game. So you've taken what is one of their, let's call it their best 3 players at the football club, and be able to take him from 100% down to about 30% of what he can normally do. So that was a big win and part of the reason why certainly the GWS got a result. But, you know, the Pies shot themselves in the foot. But the story that comes out of it is obviously Jeremy Howard. How can they replace him? You know, they build their game on intercepts. Even on the weekend, it was 12 intercepts in the first half that they had had. So marking and intercepting the ball with him and Darcy Moore has been really their DNA. And now they've got to try to find another way. But the only thing I'll say to Pies fans is you found yourself in exactly that position a couple of years ago. How many backmen did they lose in their grand final year? And they just kept replacing soldiers and kept finding a way to come back. So, yeah, as terrible as what it is for us who love the purity of the way that Jeremy plays the game and for Collingwood fans, because it does make it more difficult, we know that if, you know, one player doesn't necessarily mean you can't get it done.
Charlie Dixon, people love footy from the 80s, and Port Adelaide's style and Charlie Dixon's dominance has taken us back there.
Yeah, look, we sort of started off on a bit of a negative with, you know, what wasn't so well with the game, but you know, I really enjoyed the Pies GWS game. You know, Port are playing really good football. I thought the St Kilda Richmond game was pretty good. I thought Gold Coast Freo was okay. Then you had Brisbane, who had 33 shots at goal. So it wasn't all the games. It was just the ones that were stinkers were really bad. But certainly, Charlie, it's amazing, isn't it? Proper, decent pre-season. Looks in the, you know, the most ripping nick you've ever seen him in, and no surprise, you know, he's been able to throw. I just love the way he's throwing himself at the contest. You know, he nearly knocked himself out a couple of times, you know, hitting the deck or winded himself because of just launching himself at opportunities. And I just, you know, with the full pre-season and having done everything right and being super fit and on top of his game, I just hope that he can, you know, keep that going and keeps the rewards going, because it was a week where finally the you know, the key power forwards hit back a little bit. You know, we had him, you know, kicking his six and Kennedy kicking four down the other end, and then, you know, a couple of others sort of bobbing up over the weekend. But it had been all the smalls up until that stage. But a lot to like about Charlie, and also a lot to like about Port.
Carlton, your thoughts, and who will you pick, Carlton St Kilda, this Thursday night?
Yeah, good game. My thoughts first up was I thought that they could probably get a result. And when that last kick, and from the angle, I was watching it from home because I'd done the earlier game that day. When the Townsend kick was from the angle that we were watching it from, it looked like it was a goal, going to be a goal for sure.
The director shouldn't pick that shot, player, I don't reckon.
Yeah. We were following it in, and it just, like, if you're a Carlton fan, and I was marrying them a Carlton just because I tipped them, and I just sort of thought, oh, you poor things, Carlton fans. That looks like it's going straight through the middle. And then, obviously, you saw the Falcon at the other end with Jones and the ball just falling sort of marginally short. But Carlton should have won the game by 4 or 5 goals. They were the better team all night. They deserved their victory. And eventually, I think it sort of was almost justice that it played out the way that it did. And sorry, Bomber fans, but you know, I just thought that, you know, really Carlton were the better side all night. And look, real kudos to Sam Doherty's comeback. The player that he is, the organiser, 33 disposals and a beautiful use of the ball. And he's a very calm player. He's got a lot, plays it completely different, but just from a leadership point of view, I think he's got a lot of Luke Hodge. Now, Hodge played it in a more brutal fashion, but just that organiser behind the ball and calm and calming other people down in his area. He's a great player and a great leader, so I'm wrapped with his comeback. And we spoke about Eddie the other day, and, you know, and this is why I love watching the footy on the telly sometimes, because they give you such great feedback. And last week, you know, we were talking about him being now the number one assist player ever. The other one that I got from the weekend was that there's only been two ever players that have kicked 300-plus goals at two clubs, and that's Tony Lockett and Buddy Franklin. What two absolute superstars of the game they are. And he's only six away now at Carlton. He's done it, obviously, at Adelaide. He's only six away at Carlton from being only the third player ever. And you have a little bloke like Eddie standing alongside of, you know, the hulks of Lockett and Franklin. I just think it's sort of pretty fitting for his legacy in the game as well. But an improving Carlton. I'll be still going for St Kilda. I did mention them just before the break. I'd like to just really quickly give them a bit of a wrap. Wrapped that they put Marshall one out in the ruck. Now, they said it was because of Ryder and a bit of soreness. I'll be fascinated to see what they do this week with selection, because Marshall is a genuine number one ruckman. And like so many of the ruck champs, they want the job by themselves. They want to be the main man and do it. Maxie Gawn does most of it by himself. Grundy does most of it by himself. Marshall is good enough to do that for St Kilda. I love their young backs, and sometimes these guys don't get any rap, but I see real improvement in Patton, Long, Clark and Caulfield down the defensive end of the ground. Yes, their recruits have come in and had a good impact, but their development of the younger guys is good as well. I mean, obviously, Dan Butler set a fantastic standard for himself. And the other thing that they should get a rap for is their organisation, because this is a side that brought in five or six different players, or five from outside, and then you go Max King into the side, who had never played with them. They've changed almost a third of their side in a period where it was the hardest period ever to do so, because you can't train together. So for them to be as organised as what they are, they deserve real credit, their coaching staff.
Terry Wallace joining us. Thanks to Stockdale and Lego, we see more than property. We'll take a break. Heaps to get to a player after the break that we haven't got to yet. So stick around.
I don't know about you guys. Like, if I see one bloke walk out of here getting a pat on the back from people out there for a good effort, I'll spew up.
Terry, what are you spewing up about this week?
Well, Dwayne, the Sydney Cricket Ground is no longer a fear for AFL clubs. For 20 years, from 1996 to 2017, teams trembled at flying up and challenging the Sydney team and the Bloods culture. Through that period, the Swans won the MCG 70% of games. And in fact, when you have a look at it, from 2012 to 2017, they're actually up at 77% winning record. For the last 3 years, it's actually difficult to believe, but the Sydney Swans have a worse record at the SCG than what they do when they're travelling interstate. In fact, in their last 18 SCG games, they are 6 wins and 12 losses for a 33% win-loss record at the SCG, which is the worst result since 1994, or the pre-Lockett days. On Friday night, the Swans kicked their lowest first quarter score in Sydney Cricket Ground history. The competition needs a hostile SCG and Bloods culture, and I'll fair dinkum spew up if they cannot turn it around.
Nice work, Terry. Big game against the West Coast Eagles at Metricon Stadium Saturday with that rejig fixture. If you didn't hear earlier today, the AFL's had to reshuffle it, and round 6 and 7 are now unknown as to who's going to play who where. But round 5, well, Thursday night...
It's amazing, Dwayne, but Dwayne, it's amazing. I mean, this is a side, you know, with them. Like, they're 0-2 at home this year, and they're 2-0 away from home, and 33%. I mean, that's unheard of for a team. The one thing you've got to do is you've got to have a fortress at your home ground, and the Swans have just lost that completely.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting this week. West Coast Eagles playing on Saturday at Metricon Stadium. Terry, we are running out of time. Your rookie of the year for MEGT, your local apprenticeship experts.
Yeah, one vote to Max King from St Kilda. Two votes to Lewis Butler from the Western Bulldogs on debut. Well done. Three votes to Hayden Young from Fremantle. Four votes goes to Tom Green, GWS. I thought the young man virtually helped them get over the line and win that game. And the five votes, guess again, Matty Rowell.
Nice work, MEGT. Supporting employers and apprentices for over 35 years. Your coach of the year for Stockdale and Lego. Bring more experience to the table. StockdaleLego.com.au.
For those who mightn't have known this one, we have three coaches each week that get the votes, one vote each. Leon Cameron, for me, he sides within 2 points of the Pies. It was a desperate win. They would have been 15th without that victory. So a really important win for the GWS. Brett Ratton, really skillful, well-organised, well-coached St Kilda on the weekend. And Ken Hinckley doing both things right. That was their first big test, and they passed it with flying colours.
And thanks for Stockdale and Lego. We see more than property. A little bit of footy golf.
50 at 16. Listen to the crowd.
They're going to go nuts when he hits this thing.
Lambert with a setup kick for Revolt. This is it.
Have you seen anything like that?
Fontapelli, the future star, the present star, steady.
Oh! Your footy goal for the weekend, player.
Very quickly, I'll run through them, Dwayne, because I know we're going to keep moving. Sydney, a bogey, Bulldogs, a birdie, GWS, birdie, a par for Collingwood, Port Adelaide, a birdie, a double bogey is your game for the West Coast, St Kilda, an eagle, well done to them, Richmond, a double bogey, Gold Coast, a birdie, Fremantle, a bogey, Carlton, birdie, Essendon, bogey, same again for Brisbane, birdie, Brisbane, Adelaide, a bogey, par football for Melbourne and Geelong, although the game standard wasn't that, and North Melbourne and Hawthorn, par footy as well. So we'll put all this up on the social media platforms, but Port Adelaide leading at 5 under. Great to see the Gold Coast on 3 under up near the top of it. And very surprising at 5 over, Richmond and 6 over the West Coast Eagles are the surprise packets of the footy goal season.
And I'm told that Connor McKenna has been released from quarantine early and is available for selection this weekend against Collingwood. So that's a big bonus for the Bombers. He did get a 1-game suspension for his breach of COVID protocols, but he was able to serve that whilst he was in quarantine. That's the AFL's rule. So he's free to play this Friday night. Would you bring him straight back in for the Collingwood game, player?
I would. I think that he adds a lot of flair to them. And look, the other thing is to support the young man. Gee, I thought he copped too much. And I know you weren't one of them, though, that you held up and waited to get all the information, Dwayne. But there's a few that went pretty hard. I know that was on the information that they were given. But, I think support the young man and get him back playing.
And the other news today is that, Zach Merritt, Essendon has accepted his 1-game suspension for the punch to Jack Silvani. Jack Silvani's tweeted today that I don't want to paraphrase him, so I'll just read the tweet. Shame to see Zach get a week. Incidents like that happen 20 to 30 times a game. He hit a sweet spot. An outcome is just unlucky. So no malicious intent whatsoever. So shame to see Zach get a week. Sounds like Jack Silvani doesn't think that's worthy of a week.
Yeah, look, I think that's really supportive from Jack's point of view. But, we can't have clenched fists with ending up with blokes in hospital. And, whether it was a sweet spot, whether it wasn't, I think we've just got to have a standard that sort of says if you're going to use a clenched fist, you're going to get a week.
I'm with you on that. Great to have you, player. I look forward to talking to you later in the week. Thanks a lot for your time again.
Good on you, Dwayne. Cheers.